This is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to The Drift Space.
Initiating neural magic in 3, 2, 1.
Space. They went into space. They strapped a rocket jet onto a Pontiac and made a literal hit and run on a satellite. They flew a car into space. Space. They flew a car into space.
The final frontier.
Final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Pontiac.
Speaking of which, hi, welcome back to the Drift Space. I'm Rebecca. I'll be your host for this episode.
I'm G. You
go first, right? Is it you that goes first?
Typically, D goes before
you
D.
Know, if you want to go first, then you go first. It's fine. I mean, in a world where we fly cars in space, I mean, why the heck not?
I'm JR.
and Cardi B's an undercover Interpol agent person. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Well, that's who that was. Okay, I had no idea who that was.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Dave, by the way. And today we're talking about Lord of the Rings.
Clearly.
I thought this was Harry Potter.
We're not too far off.
Okay, so obviously we're going to be discussing the 9th film of the Fast and Furious franchise that just recently came out last Thursday. But before we do, I want to briefly talk about how I got into the franchise. Believe it or not, about a month ago, like Mortal Kombat, I had zero knowledge of the Fast and Furious films. One day, at the end of May, my brother mailed me an early birthday gift. All 8 films of Fast and Furious box set on Blu-ray. And my first thought was, I'm never going to get any work done, am I? My second thought was, okay, JJ seems to like it, Dave seems to like it, JR seems to like it, let's see what's so great about it. This was about like 5 or 6 weeks ago, give or take. Fast forward to the present, I'm all about family.
That sounded like Stewie. I'm all about family. Brian.
You owe me a 10-second car, Brian.
You'll always be my brother.
Brian.
That actually worked really well, and yeah, I did not plan that.
I see no flaw in that.
So all in all, the Fast and Furious movies are all a combination of Western and heist movies, Power Rangers with GEDs mixed in with sexiness and the over-the-top ridiculousness usage of cars. I kid you not, I was watching the 8th film with G the other day, last week, I believe, and we were discussing how these characters went from drag racing to stealing DVDs to dragging a 30-ton bank vault to a train heist full of cars to taking down an airship to parachuting out from an airship with cars to taking down a submarine while being fired at with heat-seeking missiles and nukes.
With cars.
And let's not forget that whole rope of vehicles grappled together one by one, trying to take down a helicopter and hop and stop. And I kid you not, my next question to my brother was this: what are they going to do next? Go into space?
That's exactly what we're going to do.
I called it.
Now you've got a point, because, all right, first I got to correct you. I got into this kind of through G2, so going into Fast and Furious was kind of a new experience for me, but it started long ago. I begrudgingly went to the first two, and I was like, well, I'll never visit this franchise ever again. Little did I know it would rival the MCU. if if Fast One would be Iron Man, setting up this the franchise, giving us what we're expected to expect in this universe, then Fast Six has to be the Avengers, and Fast Nine has to be Endgame. My God, this thing is so interconnected, I don't know where to start.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, we did have some characters from MCU on Fast and Furious. Actually, in this ninth one, Groot reunited with Yondu.
That is funny. Yeah, that is funny.
And Ego.
Yeah, you got Ego, and I'm waiting for them to cast Bradley Cooper in the next one. So, there you go.
It's funny. I was watching Fast 7, and I was joking. I was like, you know, all they need now is freaking Samuel L. Jackson to come out, talk to Dom, be like, I'm here to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative.
I mean, would that really surprise anyone at this point?
No. 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 What a dumb question about the Fast and the Furious franchise. Are we supposed to be surprised at anything, like any direction that they take this? Here's the thing about, I love Fast and the Furious, right? I've been dedicated fan of it. Whether or not it's a good movie or not, I've enjoyed the heck out of them. Ever since the very first one came out in like 2000, 2001, something like that.
Yeah.
Me and my buddy, Mason, he was supposed to be at my wedding, but he couldn't because he was deployed. We were so into Fast and the Furious. My God. We would look at pictures of cars on the internet for hours because of Fast and the Furious. I wanted a Skyline. I wanted that Nissan Skyline GTR. That thing was so pretty. But here's the thing. And I was watching Fast 9 and it dawned on me. The Fast and the Furious franchise has become Mission Impossible. Now, bear with me.
Thank you. Okay, I'm eager to hear this. Go.
Think of Vin Diesel like Tom Cruise. Vin Diesel is Tom Cruise in this situation.
He's Ethan Hunt. Yeah.
Yes, he is the Ethan Hunt of the situation. We had very humble beginnings of the Fast and the Furious franchise. Rebecca, you alluded to it earlier. We're talking about stealing DVD players and, you know, having, you know, taking things up a notch, going undercover for U.S. Customs or whatever to bring down a giant drug lord. We're doing James Bond type stuff with cars now. And then it takes the next step further and the next step further and the next step further. And I can't believe it took me nine movies. Nine movies.
How many were
it to occur to me that these movies are Vin Diesel's excuse to do more ridiculous things with cars, much like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, where he's just like, what's the next ridiculous stunt I can do? It's like the exact same thing. It is the exact same thing. And I am not saying this as a critique. I love it. I love it. I love it. I'll watch it. I'll enjoy it. These movies are not boring. You can't tell me that they're like any of these movies are boring.
And I think the comparison is very complimentary. Honestly, I love the Mission Impossible movies too. I think they've evolved into some really outstanding action flicks. It's just I didn't think we'd get to the point where the Fast and the Furious would evolve into what Mission Impossible has done, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, Fast and the Furious started off as sort of an offset of Gone in 60 Seconds. It used like almost an identical color filter to it. And it just exploded because of family, y'all. Because family.
Well, and to be fair, I think the Fast and Furious movies have improved substantially since the early ones. I think that it had to get in its bid to become more ridiculous. It became about more as well, because the first Fast and Furious movie, if I were to line them all up, I would say the first one is the weakest of the bunch. I know it's heresy to say such a thing, but quite frankly, I just didn't need a Point Break with cars. Point Break with cars with a third act, maybe. I wasn't even aware we were at the climax until it happened. I actually enjoyed the second movie more. And then the third movie came along, and while I questioned how much of a Fast and Furious movie it actually was because it had a totally different cast, it was actually a more fulfilled storyline all the way through. Things didn't really, really, really start clicking with me until Fast and Furious, the fourth movie. From there, it was all about escalation. Well, let's take down a tank. Let's take down an airplane. Let's take down a helicopter. Let's take down a submarine. What's next? Satellite, you know, and in all of this, it has this very earnest theme of family. Well, what is family? Family is teamwork. Family is bonding. Family is coming together as one. And it occurred to me early on, actually, I watched these movies and I go, oh my God, it's the American Power Rangers or the American Sentai. Because it's all about this connectivity of teamwork and family and friendship and bonding. And that's the main theme of Super Sentai. And you know, their vehicles are simply cars. Do they transform? No. But sometimes they connect. And they certainly do absurd things like jump out and parachute out of planes and stuff like that. And of course, all the characters know kung fu or some form of martial arts. Just right out of the bat. They have no reason to know. Ludacris's character, Tej. Why does he know martial arts? There was no reason for him to know martial arts. But they all do. And you know what? I buy it because they wear on their sleeves this very earnest theme and drive of family. And to be fair, most of the character work in each movie is very, very thin. But now that we're into 9 whole movies, we have massive arcs of these like kind of thin slithers, like connecting into a bunch of characters that we've fallen in love with. Think about everything Letty has gone through, you know? Think about everything Han's gone through. And Han, they went total Metal Gear Solid 2 with Han's backstory.
Oh my God. Don't even get me started on Han.
You know, they've retconned Han's death twice now. First, you know, the first retcon was that Shaw killed him. And now the second retcon is that Shaw didn't kill him. Mr. Nobody knew Shaw was about to kill him. So Mr. Nobody helped stage.
No, they retconned his death 3 times. The first time is that he died in the crash in Tokyo Drift.
Well, that was the second main thing.
Time,
yeah.
Yeah, the second time was the reason the car exploded was because Sean set the fire. Because
Shaw hit him. And then now Mr. Nobody has faked his death. And as silly and over the top as this is, I'm sitting here going, well, actually, it matches the action sequences of the rest of the movie because they just rocketed a car into space. Why did it have to be a car? I don't know. But they did. they rocketed a car in space after retconning Han's death to the point of unbelievability. But if we're going to talk about what's unbelievable, they rocket a car into space. So it all works in some bizarre, weird, over-the-top thematic entanglement, and I'm here for it, man. Dude, you know, there have been rumors that that Universal wants to cross it over with the Jurassic Park franchise.
Oh,
you know
what? Yes.
Tyrannosaurus.
Oh, hell yes.
Do it.
Go for it. Go for it. I'm ride down a Tyrannosaurus tail. I am all for the climax of that movie being Dom Toretto on a saddle riding a Tyrannosaurus against like Cypher or something like that.
I have a proposal.
What, that they're going to go back in time?
No, no. Ew. No.
They get the DeLorean.
A little too easy, don't you think? But, you know, if they do go get to play with dinosaurs, you know, I don't care what they do in the next movie, as long as it's called Fast 10 Your Seatbelts.
I saw someone bring that up. Yeah, yeah. That's
Fast 10. That's good.
I'm glad you pointed out the Super Sentai thing, G, because I was sitting there watching these cars take out an armored vehicle using magnets. Freaking magnets. I did not see one of the main cast use a gun at all. They weaponized magnets.
I was about to say.
But the whole time I'm sitting there just going, all that's missing are the cars connecting and power multicolored jumpsuits. That's all that's missing.
Well, and so here's the thing. In the first movie, they all have their different colored cars, like Power Rangers have their different colored suits.
Thank you.
See, they switch colors every now and then. They switch cars every now and then because I keep wrecking them every time. Not only do they orbit around the planet and had magnets, but they also defied gravity for like the 400th time in a row by driving through a collapsing wooden bridge to swinging on a rope onto the other side. I'm trying my very best here to explain this. It's so hard.
Tarzan with cars.
Can we talk about for a moment? Can we talk for a moment about how aware the movie is of all of this? One of the
thank
big
you.
Themes,
especially the, Roman.
That's it, yeah. One of the big themes of the movie is, are we invincible? Because Roman's sitting here going, yeah, we've survived, you know, the bank vault, we've gunfire, airplanes, helicopters, submarines. He didn't want to bring up the submarine. And he you know, mathematically, are we invincible? And there is this kind of underlying theme of that. They do all these insane stunts that do defy gravity, despite what Tej's science says. And
which I question, too.
I want to live in a world where Ludacris does all of my science for me. Please and thank you.
I just want him writing next to me just going, numbers don't lie.
And I'll be honest, I'm getting kind of bored with like movies that go a little too meta about that. But there was something kind of enjoyable. We'll see how this ages. It might not age very well, but there is something enjoyable 9 movies in with the characters finally pausing for a moment. Like, how are we doing all of this? And he's got a point. You know, Dom gets out of the massive truck at the end of the movie. And the most that's messed up is that there's a little black, a little like on his shirt, on his white shirt, which is still pretty darn white. There's not a scratch on him. And I've tried to tie this into with the other theme, which is universally always going to be family in these movies and teamwork and friendship and bonding. But the monkey wrench here is Dom's brother, his biological brother, who they've never mentioned before. And it turns out for good reason, because Dom has left his father's death at his biological brother's feet, essentially, after all these years. And it's an interesting pivot in the family theme, because he's disowned this family, but he embraces so many others. And there were moments, nuance, such as when probably my favorite scene in the whole movie was when Han returns to the whole group, and he's like, hey, nice place. And when he says that, Dom just kind of turns his head a little. He doesn't even turn and look at Han. He knows who it is. The shot conveyed enough about the character. He knew that Han was still alive when he heard the voice. And he turned around after the fact, walked up to him, and gave him a big hug. And his brother, Jacob, was watching.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. upset at that, upset, he shut the little door he could look through, right?
Which in that scene, I just gotta hand it to Vin Diesel, because, you know, Vin Diesel's like manliest of men, right? Huge dude. And yet he can be so tender. Like the way that he hugged Han.
I legitimately thought he was gonna start crying.
Like, yeah. And
I almost wanted him to like just a tear. Cause I've seen Dom for 9 movies now just be this hardened badass of a man. I just wanted to, like, just that little Han turn. I was like, oh my God, he's going to start crying.
Well, he did cry in the 8th one when he met his son.
And well, yeah.
So yeah.
There's that. And so, I'm going to go all philosophical now. So, fasten your seatbelts.
God. I hate you so much.
Hey, you're the one who gave me those movies, so.
Yeah.
And we are appropriately called the Drift Space.
Maybe we should be the Tokyo Drift Space. Ha, ha, ha.
Rebecca, talk.
Okay, so this movie basically spoke to me in a simple message out of all that chaos. What is in your heart? That scene where little Brian asks his dad, Dom, where God is, and Dom asks, where is he? And Brian says, he's in your heart, and in turn making my heart melt into liquid. It was such a precious thing I heard from a child. To me, it seems that God once again shows his presence in a movie. What does God need with us? Sorry, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. I'm sorry. Obviously, nothing religious, but something that's more personal, intimate, down to earth, and truthful. And in Dom's heart, it's always, like you said, GJ, it's always been about family, always, whether they're related to him or not. And we see several segments in his past on how that all began when we understand what kind of man Dom becomes from his father, Jack Toretto. And Dom's father's last words to him were, it's not about being the strongest man, it's about being the bigger man. So he practically took his brother's place in jail after taking the wrench away from his hand, and then Dom uses his own anger to beat the man who killed his father during the race. Dom becomes the bigger man ever since, and taking his own responsibility in the least likeliest of ways, clearly, but taking them regardless. In his heart, he's always known that family was number one to him, even taking in former enemies. Now, in Jacob's case, on the other hand, I mean, it wouldn't be fair to call him the evil brother, no, because he chose to work for the same people who hunt down people like Dom and his crew, or that he wears black pretty much throughout the whole film, making a sort of like a yin and yang thing. No, that's nothing like that. Jacob was never evil. He was never a bad person. He was a weak person and had to learn things differently from Dom. Actually, he had to learn things differently without Dom, or anyone for that matter, and this also applies to Dom being the good brother because, well, he abandoned Jacob after he discovered he rigged their father's car to blow up, and due to their dad's last request, both brothers had flaws, and neither of them were 100% innocent, and I think what went through Jacob's heart was loneliness, envy, anger, and shame, and guilt, of course. He even mentioned to Dom that the brother he once knew is no longer there. He didn't just say that because he hated Dom. He said that because I think Jacob truly felt he could never be the bigger man, and Jacob resented him for that. But what Jacob learned is that no matter how far he fell, his family was always there to catch him. And what Dom learned was, when he was having these flashbacks while underwater, is that despite everything that Jacob has done, he was still his brother, he was still his family. And I'm reminded of the parable of the prodigal son, where there were two brothers. One was hardworking, the other took his inheritance and spent it all until he had nothing, and then finally returns home with open arms. I feel like, in a way, this film tells the tale of the two brothers in intricate, exaggerated, and ridiculous detail. A brother finally comes home, and the family's whole again. And I really do think, and like Roman said, nobody's invincible. And I'm pretty sure the character was giving the audience a hint of how strangely odd this whole film was, this whole franchise was, but basically telling us, who cares? Just enjoy the ride, literally.
I mean, I'm right there with you in that the central dynamic is Dom versus Jacob. And it's not even Dom versus Jacob for the, you know, the big MacGuffin, or Dom versus Jacob for who's the bigger, better brother or whatnot. It's Dom versus Jacob due to past pain and hurt and misunderstanding, most certainly. Dom really did jump the gun when he went in a race against Jacob when they were younger and said, you beat me, you can come home. You don't beat me, you keep driving. You know, Dom didn't even give him a chance to explain himself. And even when Jacob did explain himself, I felt Dom was
Still resentful?
Yeah, still resentful. I mean, it would have been out of character for Dom to be like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. You're fine. To kind of, you know, step down a bit. Dom is like alpha male. He's not going to, it's not going to be that simple with him. And it was both kind of a character flaw and in character for him to tell his brother, I think I would have been the bigger man and not done what dad said or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. And was it that simple? Maybe. But for, you know, two young men, two brothers, it's also probably that complicated as well. Jacob even said he didn't know that dad would have died in that accident. He was just doing what dad told him to do. So I think the misunderstanding there is really what drives the wedge between the two. And it's an interesting take on a whole franchise that has dedicated its time to the theme of brotherhood and family. Because before this movie, you know, who has Dom's brother been?
Brian.
Brian. And he will always be Dom's brother. And now we hit a movie where we have his biological brother, his literal brother, but they're at odds with each other. This is the anti-Brian, right? This is the Brian he's not proud of, the Brian that he disowned, the Brian that he had a misunderstanding with and didn't want to understand. And now there's this chance of redemption for both of them through the guise of weaponizing magnets.
So it just occurred to me too that I think while he still harbored all of that, he did have regrets about it and learned from his experience with his brother when he basically cast him out. Do y'all remember in the first movie with Vince?
Yes. Yes. Dom wasn't too...
The Jane Cobb of the group? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they had like that. It wasn't quite on the scale as killing your father or anything. But at the end of the day, he did welcome him back in.
Yeah. I thought that was a major flaw too. I guess because, like GJ said, there was so much pain in between Dom and Jacob that somehow Dom just could not get past it, and until he went through a near-death experience and had all these flashbacks and literally had an epiphany. So, man, those near-death experiences can really... Whew.
Dave, I want to go back to the example you just brought up in the first movie. There, can you remind me again why Dom was considering or did kick him out? It's been about a year since I watched the first movie.
Wasn't it related that he was trying to call out Brian as a cop, wasn't it? And Dom just kind of was like, no, not this guy. He's good. I thought that's what it was.
Oh, are we talking about Vince?
Either that or he was trying to do a side hustle with the rival.
I think he was trying to do a side hustle. Wasn't that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. And he lets him back in.
Yeah.
I'd like to kind of dive in a little bit more with the comparison between him and Jacob there for a second, because what do you think both these characters did that made Dom want to relent, want to kind of forgive and let them back into family, essentially? Like what were the pivotal moments that Dom said, no, you're still family and we've got you?
Well, my first thought was, when he said, are you hungry? You're saying grace.
I think one of the big things is Vince actually came back.
I was going to say, yeah.
Whereas Jacob's stayed gone.
Vince always came back.
Yeah. Would you consider Jacob was too stubborn to come back? Or did Jacob consider himself too strong to have that kind of weakness to crawl back to Dom?
I don't think Jacob considered himself at all in that situation. I think he didn't want to appear weak to his bigger brother, his older brother.
Okay.
I think it has everything to do with how Dom would have perceived him.
I agree with that.
Whereas Vince had the humility.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And Vince is also a childhood friend too.
Mm-hmm.
Like Vince had been around since the beginning too. So he was around for everything that went down.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it comes down, it sounds like it comes down to a lot of pride as well. A lot of alpha male pride.
Yeah. I was just going to say on the psychology of Jacob and how he basically his upbringing and how people perceived and treated him and living in the shadow of his bigger brother.
Whereas Vince probably had no issue kind of playing second fiddle to Dom.
No, he didn't care. He was in love with Mia.
Right, right. Yeah. No, that's
I'm only your friend because your sister's hot.
Yeah. I mean, no, but yes.
Yes, yes. Okay, no, I just thought, like, when you brought up that comparison, I just thought it was fascinating because that, yeah, again, I tend to write off the first movie's family themes as not as strong as the later ones, particularly the seventh one. And when you made that comparison, I thought it was really fascinating because, again, we have two men that Dom grew up with and who left at different points in their lives, but then, you know, one kind of crawled back, and the other, when he came back, he was eager to start a fight. And I find that dynamic, that comparison, kind of interesting because we've seen like a smaller version of this already that went very well. And now we have an entire movie of how it completely goes south. And I think that's a fascinating comparison.
Yeah. And I'm not going to talk too much about the first movie, but I'd give it a second watch, you know, for those of you who haven't seen it in a while and didn't really catch the family dynamic, look for what happens with Vince. Jesse being like a prodigal son almost.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that.
I love the first movie. It's not my favorite fast flick, but it's up there.
Did anyone's hearts begin to sink at the end of the film where Dom says, "We have one missing at the table," and Mia says, "He's on his way." Then you see a blue car parking in the driveway. I'm still not over the seventh film.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was something that I really felt like tied the movie together because, you know, I mentioned before, this franchise had such humble beginnings. And I like that they kind of brought that back full circle and to say, hey, we're still grounded in a movie where we went off into space in a car, but we're still grounded in what we put forth in the first movie and continued to build upon until then. Like, this is the heart of that. This is where that heart is. It's never left. It's always been there since the first movie.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree with that. And it warmed my cockles to know that the...
I beg your pardon.
The... I said cockles. They did both Brian and Paul Walker respect just seeing the car drive up and insinuating that,
oh, you know, it's, it was
that
beautiful. Was,
you know, yeah. And I, you know, no CGI Paul Walker, none of that nonsense. He's still around. He's still alive. He's still kicking. And he still comes to the barbecues.
And babysits.
And would Brian have probably come back for this madness? Probably, if Paul Walker was still alive.
Of course he would.
But, you know, I mean, I bought the whole, it was enough. I bought the whole Brian's an ex-FBI agent. You know, our three kids need to have protection while Cypher is loose. You're not going to find anyone better than freaking Brian O'Connor.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. All right. I bought that.
I did too. Yeah.
So, but I also kind of like this almost, you know, mythical status that Brian's character has taken kind of in the background. He's always in the background protecting the kids, coming to the barbecues. That blue car comes up. We don't see anyone step out. It was just, it was a good moment. And I think it really honored both the character and Dave, like you said, the franchise as a whole.
I was just thinking about, for whatever reason, who would be Zordon? Like, beautiful sentiment, G, but who would be Zordon?
Yeah, okay.
I feel like Mr. Nobody,
yeah,
right?
I would have to say Mr. Nobody.
That's a question that was never answered. We don't know what happened to Mr. Nobody. They never found him.
No, we don't.
Now, as I understand it, we have Fast 10, your seatbelts, and Fast 11.
Yes. 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 Yeah,
both shooting back to back. So I hope this will be answered.
Baker.
And I'm hoping
two more movies.
I'm hoping that two more movies. JR.
I hope this franchise. No, I want this franchise to outlive me. Okay. I want to be in the nursing home, eating my little mashed potatoes, having somebody spoon feed me while I'm watching cars do somersaults out of planes and swimming with dolphins.
Now Pongo's review of Fast and Furious 5. Thousand.
Somebody left the fridge open.
No, you know, there are actually two other short films out there and an entire TV series.
There's a 4-season animated series about Dom's cousin, I believe. Yes.
Yeah.
Why did you not tell me this until now?
Netflix.
Netflix, man.
I've been JR. I've got a TV show to watch.
And not only that, but we have in the works, the Hobbs and Shaw sequel is in the works, and we have an all female.
Oh, really? Yeah. I'm so happy.
With that ending of Hobbs and Shaw, how could there not be a sequel?
We also have a tentatively planned all female Fast and Furious spinoff as well. I think Letty's leading that one.
Ooh.
Oh, so now we're going Ocean's 8.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Which is something else I'd like to bring up real quick. I felt the ladies had a lot more to do in this movie than in prior films. Was it just me?
I mean, yeah, you had a lot of girl power in this.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with the Letty and Mia team up, heading over to Tokyo.
Great, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Ramsay getting behind the wheel for the first time, only to let everyone know that she can't drive.
That was precious. That was precious. I want more of that.
I don't know. I mean, I think pulling a car from across the street through three buildings made up for her lack of not driving.
Yeah. Nothing metallic in those buildings at all. Really universal.
Didn't take anything else except the car.
Well, I think when it comes down to it, F9, we're at the 9th film in the franchise, really the 10th film in the franchise, and it's self-aware to be exhaustingly fun and maintain its theme of family with just as much earnest as it has in the last, you know, 4 or 5 movies. And that's something that I really appreciate about the film, and that's something I hope that the next two films continue to carry over, because I'm not tired of this, miraculously. And because it's so innocent of a franchise, you know, it knows exactly what it's doing, and it, you know, it doesn't go into any deep dives necessarily, but there's enough there to get the heartstrings, you know, plucked. And I really appreciate about that this franchise, and I'm glad F9 has continued that tradition.
Now I'm thinking there should be a Fast and Furious and Transformers crossover.
We haven't been watching that.
Wait, what?
Rebecca, did you miss any of my live tweets? Because I was like, I need Optimus Prime. I need Dom driving Optimus Prime right now.
Well, didn't they?
And then Brian just sliding in on Bumblebee. I need that in my life.
The actor who plays Roman.
Tyrese Gibson. Yeah,
he's Tyrese Gibson.
He's actually said that he wants a Transformers Fast and Furious crossover.
Tyrese Gibson is the gem of the Fast and the Furious franchise.
He is. He truly is.
Yeah, when he started his monologue during a montage of Dom and the others trying to stop that centipede tank or whatever, I truly thought he was going to die. I mean,
no,
they can't.
They can't kill him.
Not a chance.
They can't kill him nor Tej. No.
If they do kill him, they're going to retcon it 3 times and then bring him back.
No, they weren't going to kill him. They did fine. They called Space AAA, and then the Russian space station came and picked them up. So they're fine.
Why do they look like minions?
Yeah, some of the writing, the whole Star Wars reference thing.
Anyway.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into our poorly pitched.
Our poorly pitched. Yes. Who had it? It was you, right?
It was me. It was me. You? And my poorly pitched was a former drug lord gets in a battle with a supernatural Asian.
Is it Returner?
No. Although, I mean, props for pulling that movie out. That,
yeah, I'm guaranteed like nobody else knows what that movie is, but
I think Dave does.
I do.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Go on.
Anyone?
Dude, I'm drawing such a blank.
I have no idea.
The Shadow.
Oh my gosh.
See, I never saw that.
Yes, you did, Rebecca. There's no possible way. I wasn't sure about Dave, and I know for certain JR has seen it.
I have not seen it.
You haven't seen it? Okay.
I haven't
seen
it.
I'm actually angry now. I hate you.
Do you get it?
I do. I like the puzzle pieces are now coming into place. I hate you.
All right, who has the next one?
I've got one.
All right.
A foreigner loses his money in San Francisco and can no longer get home. Poorly pitched.
I feel like the San Francisco should really narrow this down for me, but there's got to be a trick.
We'll find out next time.
We'll find out next time.
A trap!
It's another Wreck-It Ralph situation, guys. No, I'm kidding. It's not.
Okay, we'll have our Fanboy 50 on our next episode, but I think it's time to pull the brakes on this one. Thank y'all.
Boo!
Hold that brake for me, will you, darling?
Close the windows.
Thank y'all for joining us in our discussion of Fast 9. I am your host, Rebecca. If you'd like to check out my artwork, commissions are open. You can find me on the Linktree app, linktr.ee/reb.hudge.
And I'm Dave. My commissions are also open, but I haven't heard from anybody.
What?
Boo.
That sounds fake.
It's on my Substack, actually. But if you want to know what I really do, my wife and I do a podcast called Pizza and Parsecs. Go check it out, pizzaandparsecs.com.
I'm G. I'm on Twitter. You can find me at G-Man Mysterioid, and you can check out my Substack, Deferential Wrath of Rusting Markalite Cannon, at markalite.substack.com.
And I'm JR. I've got the Twitter, littleman_says1. Come over there and talk nerdy to me. I've also got the Instagram, where I do cosplays, littlemancosplay.
And we are The Drift Space. You can check out our show on bit.ly/TDSlinks, where you can find us on all your favorite podcatchers. If you like what you've heard, share it with a friend, then you both can hit us up on our socials at The Drift Space. Geek out with us, or just say hey. We love to hear from you. And as always, thanks for listening and for your support. And as always, stay strapped.
Welcome to the family!
Vroom! Vroom, 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 vroom!
And we can freaking space! Oh my god!